I want to welcome you back to our continuing study of King Hezekiah's resistance to the Assyrians. Now, God is the one that is doing all the resistance. Hezekiah wants to stand up, and God is helping him to do it. In fact, we just saw how the Assyrians threatened Hezekiah and the people of Judea. Even suggested that God couldn't help them, sent nasty letters and such. And what does Hezekiah do? He goes up and talks to God at the temple. He takes the threatening letter, lays it out in front of God's face there at the temple mount. He gets a message from God through the prophet Isaiah that, yes, I'm well aware of what the Assyrians have to say, what they're doing, what they're threatening. But guess what? They're not going to get away with it. They're not going to be able to take Jerusalem. They're not even going to be able to shoot an arrow at Jerusalem. They're not going to put any siege works up. I am going to send them packing. And we know that God dispatches one of his angels and takes out 185,000, I believe it is, of the Assyrian soldiers in a single night. When the rest of them wake up in the morning, they see their dead compatriots, and Sennacherib panics, and he orders an end to this expedition and heads back north to Mesopotamia. Right around that same time, we find out that Hezekiah gets gravely ill. Now, before we read about that in Isaiah 38, I want to read something very quickly from 2 Chronicles 32, 23, which is the follow-up to the victorious intervention of God regarding the Assyrian invasion that was stopped. 2 Chronicles 32:23 says, "And many brought gifts to he who is to Jerusalem, and precious things to Hezekiah, king of Judah, so that he was exalted in the sight of all nations from that time onward." So King Hezekiah is perceived by his own people and people in the country surrounding Judah as being victorious in resisting the Assyrians. And so he becomes a little bit famous for that. And there will be some people that reach out to him because of that fame. So keep that in the back of your mind in just a moment. First, he gets sick. Isaiah chapter 38, because Isaiah plays a big role in this part of the story. He tells the story. He says, "In those days, Hezekiah became sick and was at the point of death." Now, he has some sort of tumor or open wound, perhaps cancer, maybe a really bad infection, but he has something physical going on here, and he is grievously ill. It looks like he's going to die. And it's right hot on the heels with the victory over the withdrawal of the Assyrians. Verse 1 of chapter 38 continues. Isaiah, the prophet, the son of Amos, came to him and said to him, "Thus says he who is, set your house in order, for you shall die, you shall not recover." So Isaiah is given the, no doubt, sad task of going to good King Hezekiah and telling him, you're going to die from this illness. You need to start making arrangements for your kingdom. Start making arrangements for your family. And then Isaiah leaves. And I picture Isaiah crying over this, because he's been right there near Hezekiah since Hezekiah became the solo king, helping him to make the right choices, do the right things. And Hezekiah becomes, as the testimony of the scripture says, the best king of Judah that ever was. And so Isaiah delivers this sad message, and then he leaves. And Hezekiah is left alone with this message. Verse 2, then Hezekiah turned his face to the wall, and he prayed to He Who Is. So he gets the news, you're going to die. And his response is, I'm going to pray. He said, please, oh, He Who Is, remember how I've walked before you in faithfulness and with a whole heart, and I've done what is good in your sight. And Hezekiah wept bitterly. So he starts crying to God for more time. Let me live. Please, God, you know I've been doing the right thing. Verse 4. Then the word of He Who Is came to Isaiah. Go and say to Hezekiah, thus says He Who Is, the God of David your father, I have heard your prayer. I've seen your tears. Now, I think it's in the Kings passage. We have the parallel of this story in 2 Kings 20. The parallel in Chronicles is in 2 Chronicles 32. Isaiah was not even out of the palace grounds before God told him to turn around and go back to Hezekiah and give him an update based on Hezekiah's petition for more time. So, the prophet returns. So we're only a matter of minutes since the death notice was given. I heard your prayer. I've seen your tears. Behold, I will add 15 years to your life. So I'll give you 15 more years. Now, at this time, Hezekiah is still a fairly young man. Because I'm still working on some chronology things, don't know exactly how old he is, but he is not anywhere near the average time of dying. And even with 15 years added, he won't be near the average lifespan termination point. And so I like to say that Hezekiah gets good news. He gets 15 more years. But he also gets some bad news. You only get 15 more years. Verse number 6. I will deliver you and this city out of the hand of the king of Assyria and will defend this city. So God promises him that the Assyrians are not going to take the city. That's already been provided for once, and it will be provided for continually. Verse 7. This shall be a sign to you from He Who Is, that He Who Is will do this thing that He has promised. And then, again, I think it's over in the 2 Kings passage, that the Lord has Isaiah offer to King Hezekiah one of two signs. They're both related, though. It's got to do with a shadow clock. Now, we all know about sundials and how they work as a shadow clock. Well, these guys had much more complex shadow clocks than just simply a little stick or a little post sticking up and the shadow moves across numbers. They had steps, whole big three-dimensional things that they could set up that allowed the shadow to go across to show the time. And so Isaiah, at God's prompting, says to Hezekiah, so God is going to give you a sign by the shadow clock. Do you want it to go 10 steps forward or 10 steps backward? And Hezekiah's response is, well, it's always moving forward. I want it to go backward. And so, this is what we read in the Isaiah 38:8 passage. Behold, I will make the shadow cast by the declining sun on the dial of Ahaz turn back 10 steps. And so the sun turned back on the dial the 10 steps by which it declined. So God turns back time, or at least turns back the shadow on the timepiece. Now, people get all involved in this and say, are you telling me that God reversed the rotation of the earth? That God messed around with the mechanisms of solar dynamics and earth dynamics? Maybe. For him, it wouldn't matter. He's God. He created all that stuff. He could easily reset all that. But he could just as easily refract light and make it feel like the light of the sun had gone backward 10 steps on this clock. Either way, it's a miracle. God gives Hezekiah a sign of more time. Now, I want you to file this away because I am a proponent, as a small number of Jewish rabbis before me, that Hezekiah is the one who wrote the book of Ecclesiastes. And the book of Ecclesiastes is all about death and how it is inevitable. And how do you turn back time to make the most of the days that you have? And so I believe that this clock shadow fits into the Ecclesiastes phrase about there's nothing new under the sun, as in the sun is going all the time through the day and night cycles, and time passes on. And so there's nothing new that comes up as time passes. And I also believe that Hezekiah was trying to make the most of those 15 years. As I said earlier, at first it was like, good news, I get 15 more years. But as those 15 years start to tick by, he realizes, I know exactly how much time I have left, and it ain't much. How is that supposed to work? And so the book of Ecclesiastes wrestles with making the most of time and the futility of life itself. And so I will present the book of Ecclesiastes from the perspective of this event in King Hezekiah's life. And I hope you'll be intrigued by it when we do it. Now, verse number 9 of Isaiah 38. A writing of Hezekiah, king of Judah, after he had been sick and had recovered from his sickness. So he gets well. We have, again, the story, I think it's in 2 Kings. I'm not going to flip over there because I just want to mention it quickly, that Isaiah is instructed to make a poultice of figs and put it on the sore and clear it up. And so whatever it was that he was dying of, Hezekiah is treated by Isaiah for it, and it clears up. And once it's cleared up, once he has the sign, once he gets clear of the disease, of the problem, then he sits down and composes a testimony of praise to God. Verse number 10. I said, in the middle of my days, I must depart. I'm consigned to the gates of Sheol for the rest of my years. So this is him saying, I was only in the middle of my life, and suddenly I was being sent off to the place of the dead. I said, I shall not see he who is in the land of the living. I shall look on man no more among the inhabitants of the world. So I'm going to die. I can't go back up to the temple anymore once I'm dead. I can't have visits with my friends, my neighbors, my relatives once I'm dead. There's no interaction. Verse 12, my dwelling is plucked up and removed from me like a shepherd's tent. These are similes and metaphors for losing his life. The body is like a tent that our spirit lives in. And so he says, it's like my body's packing up. Like a weaver, I've rolled up my life. See, weavers, when they're, making their cloth, at some point, they have to stop and cut their work product off the loom and then roll it up and ship it off to whoever it is they made it for. So, like a weaver, I've rolled up my life. He cuts me off from the loom. So, God is cutting me off from the life that I've had up to this point. From day to night, you bring me to an end. So, I was living, and now I'm going to be dead. I calmed myself until morning. Like a lion, he breaks all my bones. From day to night, you bring me to an end. This may be a description of how he was feeling physically during this time, that day and night were rough. And he felt like he'd been mauled by a lion. Some of you, perhaps, like me, when we've been sick, we describe ourselves, I feel like I've been beat up. I just feel like somebody's rolled over me with a big car because I just hurt everywhere. And so he says, that's what I felt like God just broke me up. Like a swallow or a crane, I chirp, I moan like a dove. And you can picture that, can't you? You're laying in bed and you're kind of just whimpering, just moaning because you hurt. My eyes are weary with looking upward. So I'm tired of crying out to God, please help me. Oh, Lord, I'm oppressed. Be my pledge of safety. So God, please intervene. What shall I say? For he's spoken to me, and he himself has done it. I walk slowly all my years because of the bitterness of my soul. So he acknowledges God is the one that originally told him, your life is over, get things in order because you're going to be dead. And so I walk slowly, dealing with the bitterness that came from the reality. I'm a dead man. I'm dying. There's nothing I can do about it. Oh, Lord, by these things men live, and in all these is the life of my spirit. Oh, restore to me health, restore me to health and make me live. So here's that request. This is probably part of the prayer that he was praying when he turned his face to the wall. Behold, it was for my welfare that I had great bitterness. But in love, you've delivered my life from the pit of destruction, for you have cast all my sins behind your back. So he acknowledges that it's not just the physical side of the equation that he's thinking about. He's thinking about the spiritual side as well. Yes, you gave me back my physical life for a bit. You saved me from going down to the pit of death. But you've also told me that I can have my sins gotten rid of by coming to you, having a relationship with you. Verse 18, for Sheol does not thank you, death does not praise you. Those who go down to the pit do not have hope. They don't hope for your faithfulness. This is the idea that when you are absent from the body, your body is not going to be doing the normal things that it would do, such as praise the Lord. Go about and do the normal routine with family and friends. So he expresses this idea, if I'm a dead man, my spirit's going to be elsewhere, my body's going to be doing nothing. And I'd rather that my spirit was with my body doing things for you. Verse 19, the living, he thanks you as I do this day. The Father makes known to the children your faithfulness. So he's being pragmatic here. God, only living people get to interact with living people. Only living people get to praise and thank you in front of other people. Only living dads can tell their living kids how important you are to them. So basically, he wants to be alive. Verse 20, he who is will save me, and we will play my music on stringed instruments all the days of our lives at the house of he who is. Apparently, just like his ancestor David, Hezekiah is into music. He's into designing instruments and composing songs. And so he finishes this out by saying, look, Lord, save me. And there's going to be a whole bunch more singing I'm going to do so that we can be at the house, the Temple Mount, and praise you in front of all those people up there. All right, this part of Isaiah has the mention of the cake of figs. So I think it's also over in 2 Kings 20. But Isaiah had said, let them take a cake of figs and apply it to the boil that he may recover. Now, that's where I got the idea that it is some sort of open sore or maybe a tumor. Maybe it's some sort of cancer. There's something going on here. Normally, a boil would not kill you. But if it is cancerous, if it is open and full of infection, it could kill you. So Isaiah, once he delivers the message about the, you know, turn the clock back and you got 15 more years, he gives him this medical treatment, this supernatural medical treatment of putting a fig poultice on this wound, and then he'll be recovered. Hezekiah also had said, what's the sign that I shall go up to the house of he who is? And we already know about that sign. He was just singing about going up to the temple, right? And so the sign was turning the clock back 10 steps. At this point, we have a visit from the Babylonians. Remember that Hezekiah had become famous because he had turned back, supposedly, the Assyrians. Everybody in the Middle East is upset about the Assyrian Empire. And Hezekiah is the only one that's kept his capital city when the Assyrians tried to sweep through. So he's famous about that. But he's also now famous for recovering from a very grave illness. Chapter 39 of Isaiah. At that time, Merodach-Baladan, the son of Baladan, king of Babylon, sent envoys with letters and a present to Hezekiah, for he heard that he'd been sick and had recovered. The Babylonians have been tributary to the Assyrians for quite some time, but they have had little pockets of resistance where they've tried to recover their independence, and then they get beat down again. And so evidently, this event in Hezekiah's life takes place right around one of those attempts at independence. And so the Babylonians are looking to Hezekiah as a potential ally in resisting the Assyrian Empire. And these Babylonians are glad that he's still alive and send him this present. Verse number 2, Hezekiah welcomed them gladly. Nothing wrong with that. Perfectly fine for him to say, thank you for the present, thank you for the well-wishing. The problem that we have to talk about next is this. He then showed them his treasure house, the silver, the gold, the spices, the precious oil, his whole armory, all that was found in his storehouses. There was nothing in his house or in all his realm that Hezekiah did not show them. So Hezekiah pridefully and foolishly starts showing off the stored up resources and materiel that his kingdom has to stand against the Assyrians and anyone else. And God is not pleased that he let that information out.